Remix. Rewind.
This is the remix.
No, this is the rewind.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Jay LaVon.
It's the one and only Jasmine J.
Hey, y'all. It's your girl, Jada Kalise.
And this is
Remix and Rewind.
And if you're new here, this is the place where we introduce you to new music, artists, theories, and ways to connect your real life to the music you listen to. On this episode, we're diving into Daniel Caesar's new album, Son of Spurgy. This project is shaped by his relationship with his father, gospel artist Norwell Simmons. As the Toronto Star reports, the album's title comes from his dad's nickname, Spurgy, and the record reflects Caesar's journey of forgiveness and self-acceptance. After years of tension and rebellion, he says that he finally stopped fighting being his father's son, realizing how much he respects and mirrors him. His love of family permeates the album. His aunt appears on Rain Down, his father's gospel music is sampled on Baby Blue, and his little brother features on No More Loving.
Now, before we dive into the album itself, I first want to touch on how Caesar decided to roll out the album. So to promote this album, he did a bunch of pop-up tours across North America in different public parks, including places like Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, Los Angeles, Houston, Atlanta. And I just feel like it was really effective in promoting the album because I haven't seen a pop-up tour in a while. I don't know when the last time y'all saw a pop-up tour was, but I've never seen someone just do free pop-up tours like in this day and age. I mean, maybe they have, I don't know. But I just thought it was really effective because I feel like it's a good way to get people who don't maybe listen to you all the time to hear you, and it's more accessible than if he were to do a concert, because I've said it before, but like I feel like concerts are definitely more for like people who can afford you and not necessarily your biggest, most supportive fans. Like, so yeah, I just thought it was really effective. What do y'all think?
And pop-up shows, they're free, right?
Yeah,
I wasn't aware of that before just now, but I think if anything, I enjoy it because it reminds me of the Chitlin Circuit,
mm-hmm.
which is like, it's basically like a route of different venues that black artists used to stop by in the mid like 20th century, so like the 1960s, when blues and R&B was just like creating its own genre,
mm-hmm.
because black artists couldn't go and perform where their higher profiled white counterparts could because of segregation and everything. So they went to the Chitlin Circuit, and the idea was to go to where the people support you, go to where you can perform freely, go to where you can, you know, actually be paid adequately for your talents. So I think it has a little bit of that same vibe and ambition behind it, is to like go to where you have the most support and allow those people to embrace you and your music.
And it also shows how popular you are in certain places. Like you said, like if you go to, I feel like when you later on decide to do an actual like real life tour, you know where your audience is, you know what songs they favor. And I feel like it's a good way to assess who your audience is in different places.
Like a precursor to a tour, kind of?
Yeah, like if he were to do a tour, he knows now what songs to play based on what had the best reaction in Atlanta or what had the best reaction in Montreal.
That's a good point. And not even just to assess your audience, but to gain a new audience as well. Mm. People that are just passing by, and people that are bystanders, like anybody like that could just be standing there and be like, okay, wait, I actually like his sound. I like his voice. I like this guy. Let me check him out. Let me check out his discography. You can get a whole new audience from that. I also feel like the way that he decided to roll out this album was very, very intentional. Some people, they'll just release a graphic saying, or the cover of a single, and say, this is coming out soon, and then that's it.
Yeah.
And then you wait for the single and you're like, okay, this is good. But
and then copy and paste for like three songs.
Exactly. And nobody's gonna remember that. People are gonna remember the fact that he had free pop out shows.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It was very intentional to me.
I definitely was finna say, because I haven't heard about Daniel Caesar in a hot little minute. And so the fact that the first thing I hear about him is doing these like free pop up shows, and it's like, oh, he might come to my city. I know he not coming to Tallahassee, but he just might. Like,
and
I
they were like random, right?
Yes. And he would post them on Instagram, I think, beforehand. And so like just the novelty aspect of being like, oh, he might come to my city, I think is really beautiful and like a great way to promote an album, especially because pop-up tours are very, very chaotic. Like, mm-hmm. I know some of his shows he did got shut down, police came, and then you also have fans, you know, acting a fool per usual. I just feel like that in general was such a good way to, and also strips back talent, because we already know Daniel Caesar is talented, but for people who don't know, who don't really know his talent, you have him playing the guitar, you have people being able to witness him singing live without all the theatrics. I feel like that's just a great way. There's a lot of artists now who cannot do that, so
and I think that's a great way. Another thing that I want to add, and probably the last thing that I want to add, is it's also a fun aspect too, to add to your career, to even just go on your Instagram and say, ooh, meet me here. And then just to wait and see who's actually going to show up, who's going to show up that supports me, who's going to show up that I could probably have in my audience or gain a new audience from. I think that's fun.
That whole album felt super intentional. Like, he really wanted us to connect with his music and remind everyone where he started. And that same energy carries throughout Son of Spurgy. And I think it's a great segue into talking about the album itself, the themes, tone, and everything that he really put into it and what it's actually saying and how that comes through in the music.
Okay, so what do you guys think the overall message of Son of Spurgy was?
In my opinion, or based on what I got, I feel like the album was a lot about his age, because I think he's 30 now. So this is like a new chapter of his life. I feel like it's a chapter of self-reflection, his identity, how he views the divine. That's what I got from it mostly.
So for me, very vital background information is I'm not familiar with Daniel Caesar on a actual deeper than service level. So all I know is like his most popular songs and that he was canceled, and that's pretty much it. So listening to this album and this being my first real introduction to him, it seems like this is all about rebirth and renewal as a person, really leaving one lifestyle alone and becoming someone else, which I could say for me as a listener was a little like haywire to come into. But I think that what I got from most of it is like a rebirth.
I agree. I also feel like this album wasn't necessarily for his fans, more so for himself, piggybacking off what you just said. And I also think he reflected a lot on his past, his faith, his family, and his identity. And like Jasmine said, it's a journey of like self-reckoning and stuff like that. So I feel like he's trying to make peace with where he came from while also confidently stepping into who he's becoming. That's what I got from it.
Yeah, I agree that it's definitely something that is extremely personal. Even when we talked about he put so much of his own family into his music, and he really centered it around his relationship with his father. I know as a man, like, and becoming a man, going from a boy to a man, if you have your father in your life, you really reflect and really think about how much you do mirror your dad and what decisions your dad made that you would make, or how many things you get from him that you don't even know subconsciously or intentionally that might have been passed down from your dad. So I think knowing that and knowing and going through that as a young man myself, I feel like I didn't really hear it in the music, but knowing that that's where he was when he was making the music, I was allowed to connect with it and respect it a lot more.
And I'm glad that you're here to say that perspective, because that's something me and Jasmine can't speak on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely something where it's like, and I'm somebody who also has experienced having a rocky relationship with their dad. So maybe not all the way towards like I resent things that I have in common with him, or I resent that I'm so similar to him. It's not that bad, but it's just like, it's almost like a double-edged sword, because you feel honored and you feel a connection to your father because you're his son, but it's also like, wow, I also inherited some of the things that I might not like about him, or I have so much in common with this person that I'm not close to. So it's like, I don't know what to do with this now. It's like, I see that I got this from him, but what do I do now? And how do I create my entire life around who I am with not even having a deep connection to where that came from? So it's a lot of like question marks. And I think that's also why he might have went so deep into his religion, because if you don't have your father, you can have the father to help you along.
That was good.
That
I'm
was
not
actually
gonna lie.
Very good. But also psychologically, I think it just makes sense. Like, I feel like you spend a lot of your teen phase and early 20s kind of being like, I'm not like them. I'm not like my parents. I'm my own person. And then you kind of come back full circle, even though obviously I'm not 30, but I can kind of tell how that usually goes. You come back full circle later in life being like, oh, these are qualities that, you know, like you said, that I might like about them, that I possess, that I might try to fix, or that I try to go forward and, you know, accept these things. Because whether or not we want to be like our parents or whatnot, we kind of are just by the nature of life. Like,
that's
just
genetics and experience.
In some way, shape, or form, we take after them. And that's why they always say, you say you're not going to do this, wait till you have your own kids.
Right.
And it's also a thing of like, I don't know if you guys have ever heard, but it's like you spend so much time running away from your parents that you become your parents.
Yes.
And I feel like there's also that aspect of everything. And especially when you resent that parent, you really do start to take after them. And if you don't know where you come from, you don't even know, like, maybe some of these toxic traits came from your grandparents and your parents tried to run away from and then ended up neglecting you the same way they were neglected because they were so busy trying to fix themselves.
Yeah.
So it goes really deep, and I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but I really wish some of these themes were more blanketed in the music.
Yeah, that's very true, actually.
And I want to go back to what you said about, you know, you may not have your father, but you have the father, and talk about songs that stood out to us the most. And I would like to start with the intro of the album, Rain Down, featuring Sampha. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a beautiful intro, beautiful vocals. The instrumental was lovely as well. And it's definitely a song that'll get you through some things, as it serves as the declaration of his Christian faith. And I also feel as though Rain Down kind of set the tone for Son of Spurgy, and more so as a prayer for renewal and grace, along with, you know, when he starts singing, Lord, let your blessings rain down on me. It's like he's asking for peace and a fresh start. And I think this song marks Daniel's shift toward faith, healing, and self-acceptance. So with that being like the intro and setting the album up, for me, it kind of, after Rain Down, it was kind of a disappointment. But I'm going to let y'all talk to that and say what tracks stuck out to y'all the most.
So to speak on Rain Down, I definitely enjoyed it, I would say, probably the most. I think I would go out on a limb to say that it set the standard really high for what I thought the project was going to be. I also walked into this album blindly but openly. I didn't do any prior research. I didn't look at any interviews. I didn't look at any articles. I just wanted the music to speak for itself and then go back and look and, you know, see what I took from it. So I enjoyed it as an opener. I love the gospel influence because I wasn't expecting it, because like I said, I didn't look at anything before. So it was a pleasant surprise. And something about choruses being the background on any song, any genre, it really just scratches my brain. So I love that he included a chorus in the background, something I wish he might have came back to at some point through some of the tracks. I only wish he would have found a way to add like some rain sounds in the back, and that's probably the only thing. But other than that, like, literally no notes. Like, it was really great.
I completely agree. I'm not gonna lie, first listen, I also went in this blindly, like Jared said. First listen though, when I heard Rain Down on Me, I was very much like, oh, this is definitely something different. The gospel, I could definitely hear gospel influence in Rain Down on Me. But upon re-listening, I just fell in love with that song. I just think it's such a beautiful song. It's orchestrated beautifully. I love the use of chorus. I love the use of a chorus in a song.
It scratches my brain, for real.
Yes. And I just feel like it was so beautiful. It's a great start to the album, period. And I think it does, like Jada said, set the tone. And I think it's very useful in its position on the album.
I think my only thing is it sets the tone, and it sets the bar so high that I feel like none of the tracks after lived up to that standard of quality.
Especially not the immediate track after.
Well, let's talk about it.
Have a Baby With Me.
Why do you feel like it doesn't hold up? Like, what are your issues with the track?
Honestly, my notes on this song, I blatantly said I didn't like this song because of the message that I received from it. Because it's like, a lyric from the song is, it's too late for our dreams, we can make a new dream, have a baby with me. Like, how about no, actually?
how about no?
You could also argue that he wanted desired a lasting connection, and having a baby would be a symbol of deep commitment. But again, I don't really think that's what he meant.
Going about it a horrible way, it's
all about perception.
I think for me, that's not what I took away from it. What I took away from it was, yes, he's using it to build a lasting connection, but I also thought of it more as like he was trapping her.
Mm-hmm.
The way that we see in culture that women normally trap men for money or for a relationship. And I think that's what he was doing. And I think that's the reason that I wasn't so hard on it, is because I've never, ever in all of my life, whether it was media, real life, or anything, really heard of a man trying to trap a woman in that way and hold on to a woman by having a child. That's normally something that is a female-centered mantra or ideal. So I thought it was extremely interesting to hear it from a man's perspective. But other than that, sonically, I was bored. There was nothing dynamic in the song sonically, and I think it was a precursor for what I was in store for the rest of the album from a musicality standpoint.
That was a good point that you just made.
So, unpopular opinion, I do actually really like this song. At first, when I first heard it, I was like, ooh, Like, I don't know if this one, like, coming back from or coming off of Rain Down On Me. So it felt like a very stark transition from that song. But listening to it now, especially, like, I re-listened to the album. I feel like it's a very beautiful song vocally and just, like, listening to it. Lyrically wise, I did not pick up on the trapping. I did not pick up on none of that. I was just like, oh, that's cute. Like, not cute, but I was just like, oh, like, he's trying to save this dying relationship with a child, which I don't condone that. I don't agree with that at all. But I think it'd be different if he actually had a child, because then I'd be side on him. Like, but I think it's just like the idea of this very like extremist idea to preserve love, which I think is just an interesting concept to grapple with. And then I also liked it because it kind of reminded me of this song called Baby Love by Rose Heart, which y'all probably don't know that song, but it tackles that same sort of idea, this idea of like lasting legacy with being a man in your 30s and having something to hold on to because you're not really in a stable relationship, if that makes sense.
Like I said, all about perception. We all had different points of view and different perspectives and different messages that we got from that song.
Yeah. And now that we're talking about it, it almost makes me want to connect it back to his relationship with his father. Mm-hmm. Because you itching to have a baby with somebody, but your relationship with your own dad isn't great. So right. I think if you have that opportunity to become a father, and you also have that opportunity to mend your relationship with your own father, I think that's important. Because I think creating life on the basis of holding on to a relationship, trapping somebody, or having an everlasting commitment instead of actually bringing somebody into this world that you choose to love and want to grow and prosper outside of you, I think either way we look at it, none of us looked at it extremely positive. So I think it's interesting to put it back in the perspective of having a relationship with his dad, because if your relationship with your dad isn't great, why would you bring another child in this world off the basis of like not the best intentions, when you know that, when you might have felt like your dad did the same thing to you at some point?
I also feel like the song, although this album is very personal to him, I do feel like the song is very relevant though, because regardless of it being a bad thing or not, people do that. Like, that's like very, very big now, especially, you know, people just having children with people because like, oh, that's gonna, you know, keep me attached to this person.
Now children almost seems to be the new marriage,
literally.
Yeah, people actually view having a baby as more of a commitment than marriage,
right?
And it's also a thing of like, when I have a child with this person, I have ownership of them in a way, and I should come before every other relationship outside of the child, because I am the baby mom, I am the baby dad, I deserve all this extra respect and consideration. Even if that person does go ahead and get married to someone else, you still feel like you should come before them because you had a child with them. And that's the society that we live in, where parenthood comes before marriage and it's more important than marriage. And like Jada said, it's more of a everlasting commitment.
And that kills me, because it's like you can have and you want to have a child with this person, but you don't want to marry them.
You don't want to spend the rest of your life with them. You don't want to be tied to them legally, but you want to be tied to them with the entire life.
Like,
a third party.
Do you hear how crazy that sounds?
Mind you, the baby's suffering for no reason.
Exactly.
Like, that baby ain't asked to be here,
exactly.
Actually.
And mind you, none of the song lyrics were talking about raising a child, loving a child.
Just, I want to keep you.
I just want to keep you. The baby
That's
is just...
A pawn.
It's a pawn. It's basically a car. Let's go half on a car. Like, let's go half on a baby.
Listen.
Let's not create life and really care about this child. I really want to have a child because I want to, you know, create a legacy. Like even Jasmine was saying.
Yeah.
You just want a baby because it's going to keep the girl. It's all about the woman. It's not about the actual life that you're bringing in that did not ask to be here.
Exactly.
And that's the problem right there, folks. That is the problem right there.
But moving on, my song that really spoke to me was the exactly next song. I promise it won't all be like this, but Call On Me. Outside of Rain Down, Call On Me was the only song that I think I actually enjoyed. I think it was cute. It wasn't anything crazy dynamic, but I think the production itself was dynamic. The instrumental was dynamic. And I think the vocals were very interesting. The choices that he made, I would say this is the song that really captured me and captured my ears. But I do think the subject matter was lacking. It's just about, you know, being there for somebody financially, tricking. And it's like, it's so many other songs that are about that, and it's nothing deep or personal. You just want to be there for somebody financially and you want to be the person that they lean on. But it's just like, it's kind of weak. So it's like, I got what I wanted as far as like for an earworm, but the message wasn't that deep. So the main thing that I was thinking when I was listening to these two songs back to back is I want the sound of Call On Me, but I want the interesting, deep, personal message of Have A Baby With Me. And I think if you could crossroads those two, that would have been the star track.
Okay.
I feel the same way about the song because I did think that it was decent. And the song and its instrumental itself isn't something that would normally be my cup of tea. Mm. So I kind of was a little hesitant into liking it. But I've realized that when I listen to albums and something isn't my cup of tea and I'm hesitant about it, I know it's going to grow on me. I have listened to this song probably like 3 times since it came out. So I can say that I do like this song.
Mm. I will say, first listen, this song stood out to me a lot. I really like this song. I said it kind of gives me like the vibes of like riding down like a long road at sunset. Like it kind of gives that vibe, and like with your head out the window, like it gives.
I definitely see that.
Yeah, it gives like indie coming of age movie. And that's a really good thing I liked about this song. Also, it's kind of different from the other songs we heard. It's not like Rain Down on Me. It's not like Have a Baby with Me. It's the first one that's completely different. And it also is like bounces genres more, yeah. Which I really like.
Yeah, I do think it's the only song that doesn't sound like the other songs on the album, which for me, as somebody who didn't, I'm going to come out and say it, didn't really enjoy the album, with that song being a standout, not necessarily because it's stellar, but just because it's different, I enjoyed.
What song stood out to you, Jasmine?
For me, I'm gonna go all the way back, y'all, all the way towards the end of the album. I'm gonna say Touching God is a song that I really feel like stood out to me. It stood out to me first listen. It stands out to me second listen. And I'm pretty sure 42th listen. That's 42. 42nd listen.
42th.
42th listen is gonna stand out too. On the 42nd listen.
On the 42nd listen, I feel like it's going to stand out again. I think, okay, the reason why I just love this song is I feel like it encompasses everything I love about the album. From sound to themes, I love the choice of the feature. It has the chorus again. Because you were saying that you felt like nothing really felt like Rained Out on Me. I feel like Touching God feels the closest to Rained Out on Me. And when you're listening to the album, like, through, like, song by song, it's just, like, is the thing that evokes the most, like, feeling like I got from Rain Down on Me. And also it kind of serves as like a bridge, in my opinion, like a bridge to the rest of the album, because obviously in the beginning of the album he's talking about more things that are like personal, but also like in a way that is like flawed, like even with like Have a Baby with Me, like that's like a like it's a more flawed mentality, but yeah. It's like going from his younger mentality to his now more sturdy faith-based mentality, if that makes sense. So I think it's a really beautiful song. I also think it's just beautifully layered and has a lot of reflection, which is why I feel like it's like a bridge.
Interesting. For me, Touching God didn't really stand out outside of obviously the spiritual influence and messagery. So it also informed everything that he was talking about earlier and mm-hmm. the meaning behind the album. But it didn't really stand out to me otherwise. I was extremely excited, probably the most excited for this track because it features Yeba. And I love Yeba. Like, she's an amazing vocalist. She's very deep with her lyrics. When Yeba sings, you feel it, you know? You feel it. So I was disappointed that she didn't come in until 2:30 into the song. And then when she did, she was just like vocalizing in the background instead of like having her own verse and having her own thing to say, which I mean, of course she ate and it sounded good, but I was expecting more being a fan of her, or wanting more being a fan of her.
I don't mean to cut you off. Well, I think you were done talking.
I was okay. You didn't cut me off.
Cool. Nah. Talking about Yeba and, you know, how she only had like background vocals on it and, you know, vocalizing in the back. I appreciate artists who let select artists have their time on an album. You know what I mean? Because Drake, he actually had Yeba featured on his album Certified Lover Boy. He had her featured on there and she had a whole song to herself. And that's how I got introduced to her. That song was so beautiful. It's called Yeba's Heartbreak, and I'm pretty sure it was about her mom. But it was such a beautiful song. So when I listened to that, I was expecting to hear more of her, like you just said.
Yeah.
But I don't really have many thoughts on that song. I think I listened to it once and then I got bored.
Yeah, same.
What?
The only thing that was keeping me them 2:30 was Where is Yeba?
That's real.
And I feel like some of the lyrics were a little repetitive. So yeah, like it was just like Jesus, Jesus. And like, I mean, I'm not atheist or nothing. Like I like that. Like I like gospel music. But
he had to preface that.
Yeah, I had to preface it by saying like, I do love the Lord. Don't get me wrong. But even when I listen to gospel music, I wanted to be talking about something. So.
But also you don't think because the song, going back to Jada's point, you don't think because the song is more personal, her having a whole little thing would be kind of unnecessary. Like I feel like maybe her having a chorus or her having having a little thing. It just wasn't necessary for the album. I feel like that's probably why her vocals, but her vocals were still good and were still like useful, but her voice in terms of like her saying stuff, yeah, Queen, we don't need that, I don't think.
No, I get your point.
Love her though.
That's a valid
point. I don't know her for real. I don't know why.
That's a valid point.
Obviously, I disagree, but I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, that's a valid point.
Why do you disagree?
I disagree because if you're going to have the person on the album at all, I think it's not robbery that they would be able to like really show their own artistry if you're going to have somebody featured. I think the whole album is you. It's not crazy to give somebody 30 seconds to talk. Like, I'm just being honest. Like, it's not crazy if we sitting down for, I'm not sure the runtime of the album, but I'm sure it's like 30, 40 minutes. Give her a little 30, 45 seconds out of that to really like pop her ish and, you know, speak to whatever messaging she got from the song. Maybe she listened to the song before she laid her track down and she really felt it and she really felt like she had something to say now, or he inspired her to say something. Mm-hmm. You get what I'm saying? Or even get a different perspective onto the music. I think that while I get what you're saying, it's a personal album. Mm-hmm. What was the point of even having her as a feature at all? If you get what I'm saying? Obviously, he wanted her there sonically. So why not let her show her real stuff?
I feel like it's because her vocals are just really good and very unique. Mm-hmm. Because he has a lot of features on the song, and I don't remember hearing no chorus from them.
That's real.
I mean, on the album, and I don't
remember
hearing
no chorus
from them.
That's very real. I'm not going to lie. I get that.
Yeah, I get that. I get that, too.
So something that we've talked about before on the show is image, more specifically Pretty Privilege, and how much it plays into who gets celebrated and who doesn't. Now, we all know, you know, Daniel, he's never really been positioned to be seen as like a pretty boy R&B star, you know?
Definitely not like a sex symbol or anything
right.
like that.
Right. So, and it makes me wonder, like, does that affect how people receive his music or how willing folks are to give him another shot? Now, I know his cancellation has a lot to do with it, but I want to compare him. Unfortunately, I want to compare him to Chris Brown because, to be honest, half of Chris Brown's 40-track albums aren't anybody's cup of tea, and we can all say something's not our cup of tea, and they still chart. So I feel like the power of image and nostalgia is working for Chris, but meanwhile, like, Daniel Drop, I'm going to say this album is pretty solid. Now, it's not my cup of tea, but it's solid. It was very intentional. It was very thoughtful, and people act like they can't give it a real listen.
I will say the reason why I feel like it's different between Chris Brown and Daniel Caesar is because Chris, like you said earlier, Chris Brown, Daniel Caesar ain't no sex symbol. He not no, ooh, we just love Daniel Caesar. And like, I feel like Chris Brown, so much about his fame and the love for him is based on his looks and the overall aesthetic of him rather than just his music. Although Chris Brown does have really good music, like nobody's saying he doesn't. Mm-hmm. I just feel like, I also think that we've also accepted certain things about him, which is not a good thing, I think. Mm-hmm. But as a society, I think we've accepted, oh, he does these things.
And it's easier to accept because he's attractive.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I 1,000% agree with that point. But to drive it home just a little bit more when it comes to Chris Brown versus Daniel Caesar, I think this project was extremely personal to him. And he created it, you know, as a reflection of his mental state and whatever he was going through in his life. Chris Brown's music normally isn't like that. Normally, Chris Brown makes music to appeal to his audience. So I think that has a lot to do with it, on top of, or maybe in spite of, Pretty Privilege. I think it's more about the purpose for creating your art. I think Chris Brown makes music that he thinks his audience would like to hear from him, versus Daniel Caesar coming out with a project that he felt like was deeply personal.
And I think that's fair to say. I want to say, at the same time, you can say that, like I said, you can say something's not your cup of tea, but where I respect people is you can say, okay, this album is pretty solid. It's intentional. This is what this is, and this is what this is. It may not chart, but I can respect him for being vulnerable enough to put himself out there and whatnot. There aren't people that are doing that. You'll have somebody that will flat out lie and say, this album sucks. Not saying that's not towards you, because I know, yeah. I know why you say what you say, but there are people who are just going to say it sucks without even giving it a real listen.
But also another point I want to think about in terms of why Daniel Caesar might not get the same, I don't want to say sympathy, because I don't think Chris Brown necessarily gets sympathy, but like the ignorance of his actions, is because Daniel Caesar's actions were like at the peak of his career, kind of, that makes sense. And or like the beginning of his career. So it's like, we didn't even have the chance to really know you
love.
For real. Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. That's a really good point. Also, I think the climate in which what he said was so different, and the social climate of America versus what he said. Honestly, first of all, we can't really talk about Daniel Caesar and his image without talking about the reason he was canceled in the first place. Mm-hmm. So Daniel Caesar was on a live and he was under the influence, and he said a lot of things pandering to Caucasian people. So he was saying things like, why are we so hard on white people? And why are black people so sensitive about everything? And, you know, I'm gonna say it. And that's why he was canceled. And also, he doubled down on it. So when I'm reading this Canada Billboard article where he talks about it, it seems like even to this day, he doesn't have so much remorse. He said, I was canceled for, you know, speaking my mind. He says, then pauses to rethink his words. I was canceled for being drunk and foolish in public. So I think even to this day, he kind of stands behind what he said. And I think the reaction to everyone saying that his comments were hurtful and him not really caring that much in the moment also aids to why I wouldn't give him that much sympathy, because like, bro, like, what are you talking about? And it hurt a larger group of people versus Chris Brown's allegations of him not liking dark-skinned women. Not saying that it's a pass or it's not as big of an issue, but it just doesn't affect everybody so deeply.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about the entire black race in America, that's a way larger margin of people that you're offending.
Yeah. I also think like misogyny against black women already isn't taken that serious. So when you compare that to like being racist, like you said, to a whole entire race, to like violence against a black woman, there's a lot of people who are just like, ooh, whoop-de-doo.
Yeah, they turn a blind eye.
Yeah,
and we're not saying that it's right at all. Not. Like, we're not condoning this. We're not agreeing that it should be this way, but we're pointing out the society that we live in and how it's easier to turn a blind eye to that, like you just said, versus you discrediting me, my grandma, my dad, my uncle, my best friend, my sister-in-law, like, you talking about all of us, you get what I'm saying?
Another thing
in
we have
defense no, I'm sorry, like, that's crazy. Like, sitting here thinking about it, like, you're doing all of this in defense of the oppressor, my guy. Like, you're not just being offensive, but you're defending another offensive force. Crazy.
And also, his audience is definitely more progressive, like, just in general. Like, I feel like it, with certain, like, rappers are not gonna have the same progressive level of an audience as an indie person making indie type music. I feel like in general, you just have a more progressive audience.
More woke.
Yeah, literally. So it's like you doing that, you really target your your whole audience.
That's definitely what I was finna say. That's where the ignorance comes in. And it's like, if you don't care to do your research to see how this is affecting black Americans who are part of your audience, people aren't gonna be so quick to forgive you. Now, granted, there are still black Americans that listen to him. I'm one of those people.
Me too.
Jasmine's still one of those people, but people gotta make that note. Listen, I know what he did was bad, but I still listen to Daniel Caesar. Like, right. I still listen to him. And sometimes I do still be feeling away, because it's like, dang, you really don't care that you hurt a community like that.
Yeah.
But I will say that that's definitely changed people's perception of him and how people see him. But even with all of that, I feel like his music still holds weight. So I want to bring it back to, you know, his music. So for Listen Up this week, the question is, what's your favorite track from Son of Spurgy, or your favorite Daniel Caesar song overall?
I think my favorite track would definitely be Rain Down from the track, or from the record or the album. Just because if there was a song that really made me feel something, it was this. I'm gonna kind of like rope in my feelings about the album altogether right here. I feel like the album was very like ghostly to me, very somber and sad. And I really, as somebody who really appreciates strong vocals and strong production and instrumentals that scratch my brain, I just wasn't feeling that. I'm somebody that's a sucker for rhythm and blues, and this is not that. And as a newcomer to his career and his music, as a newcomer to Daniel Caesar's music, Son of Spurgy is definitely not an introductory project, but I think this introductory track really did hook me. The album itself didn't hook me to listen to more of him, but this track really was like, okay, I'm excited to see what's next. I think altogether, his vocals were lackluster to me, because you're talking about very deep topics, but I don't really feel it in your vocals. I feel like you're kind of like, no, 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 no. Not even that for real. Like, he was just mumbling, singing the whole time. And I don't think he was doing that on Rain Down on Me either. So,
what's your favorite Daniel Caesar song overall?
Overall, I would have to say, and this is also something that I wanted to say that I forgot, a lot of these songs I feel like would be better if Daniel Caesar wasn't singing it and Frank Ocean was. Mm-mm. Like, fun fact, I don't really like Daniel Caesar's voice. This album showed me that. Like, I'm just bored by his voice a little bit. But when I was talking to my roommate, he showed me another song that was more aligned with how I thought his music sounded overall. And what you guys are telling me, this album is very different from what his music sounds overall. So the song is Please Do Not Lean. And I think that's really great. It's from his last project in 2023. I think that song was great. I think that was what I was looking for, expecting, and hoping, even though that's still not the music that I listen to on a daily basis, that's something that's pleasing to my ear, pleasing to my mind. I really like that. But other than that, girl, I just want to go listen to Frank Ocean after I listen to Sun and Spurgeon. No shade.
I'm going to also rope in everything I feel about the album as well. I personally, first listen, I'm not going to lie, when I first listened to the album, I was like, I could go with or without it, to be honest. But listening to it a second time, I feel like I've really grown to really like it. I think it's a really good album. I think even the songs that are like not as good to me, like I don't think they have a good little like repeat value, whatever, I still think they're essential to the storytelling of the album. And I also feel like, because you were talking about it not being good for a new fan introductory,
yeah,
I don't think it's good in terms of listening to him, like in terms of if you like listening to his music, but I think introductory to him as an artist, I think it is good for. So I really like the album. My favorite song off the album, first of all, I'm gonna say all my standout songs on the album, period. I'm gonna say Rain Down on Me, Have a Baby with Me, Call on Me, all the me's, Touching God, and Sign of the Times. I feel like those were songs that just were really beautiful on the album. I feel like they were all useful, and then vocally they had all three things that I liked. Vocally, I think they were okay. Musicality wise, I think they were good. And then lyrically, I think they were good. Well, maybe not Have a Baby with Me, but I mean, the lyrics,
Sign
I heard the lyrics.
Times was
really good, no?
Really good, no. But it was like decent. It was a song in that last little quarter of the album that got me through finishing the rest. So I'll say that.
I will say the last quarter of the album did lose me a little bit, and Sign of the Times brought me back. So
yeah,
I really like that song. And then favorite song, I'm not gonna lie, I be switching back and forth with my favorite song, because at first it was Call on Me, but I listen to Sign of the Times and I really, 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 really like it. So for this, and for the, ooh, actually, I changed my mind. For the playlist, listen up, I'm gonna say Touching God, but just know Sign of the Times is up there.
Period.
Okay, okay. For me, I would probably say Call on Me as well as my to be my favorite song off of the album. But to be different, I'll go with Moon.
Mm.
Especially, well, more specifically, the end of Moon was very beautiful to me. And to talk about my thoughts and feelings on the album as a whole, I feel like as someone who listens to Daniel, this isn't something that I was expecting to hear from him. I do appreciate him being vulnerable. I do appreciate him putting his life story out there. I do appreciate that, and I respect that from him as an artist, but this isn't something that I would go back to and listen. I'm not going to get in the car and be like, hey, put on Son of Spurgy. Like, I'm not doing that.
Absolutely.
Respectfully.
<not.
laughs> But my favorite song overall by Daniel is definitely going to have to be Superpowers off of Never Enough. Superpowers is such a beautiful song, such a beautiful song, and it's got me through so many things. So Superpowers is definitely my favorite Daniel Caesar song.
Wait, I just realized I didn't say my favorite overall of his. My favorite song of Daniel Caesar of like
his discography
is Superposition featuring John Mayer, because I like John Mayer, and I think those two people I would never think to put together until this album. Maybe I would, but before I would have never thought to put them together, and I think it's just a beautiful song.
Wow.
Also, can we rate the song to end it off? Rate the album, I mean, from 1 through 10.
I don't think y'all want to hear that for real.
Y'all gonna be really aggravated with me.
Say it.
Because if you think Jada's bad, Jada, go first.
Respectfully, I'm gonna rate it a 3 out of 10.
I literally was gonna say the exact same thing. Maybe a 2.7.
A trace?
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna do 2.7, actually.
I thought yours was gonna be a little higher.
No, I'll do three.
It's like, because there's really only 3 songs that I can vouch for.
Mm-hmm.
It's only 3 songs I can vouch for. I could add points for what I said about respecting him as an artist, for being vulnerable and putting his life story out there.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll give it a 4.5. I can give it a 4.5.
Child, no, it was a 3.
I can give it a 4.5.
I say a 6.75.
That was so specific. 6.75.
It's not a 7 to me, but it's not a 6.5. It's like in that 6.75. It's like a little bit before 6.5. Like,
a little wiggle room.
After. Yeah, there's a little wiggle room.
Okay. Right.
And it's growing on me so much that I might change my opinion. So I don't want to say something low. And it's like, that's not real to how I actually feel. So, yeah.
I'll say the reason I'm going to stick with my 3 out of 10 is because for me, there's no replay value in it, because it's just not my type of music, like, at all. It's really folksy, and that's not really my vibe. And even when I was listening to the songs, most of the songs on the album, I actually didn't listen to all the way because I was just so dead bored. So I paused the music and read the lyrics, and some of the content in the lyrics I felt like were really good. I felt like this would have been better for me as a book of poems rather than an album to listen to because I liked the lyrics. They were pretty deep, and they were really interesting. But sonically, I was just ready for it to be over. So it's going to be a 3 for me. And like Jada said, there's only a couple songs that I would even want to listen to again.
That's real. I don't agree, but that's real.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Like, I hate
you don't gotta apologize.
That I might be offending someone, but I'm just speaking my truth, man. It's my truth.
Hey, that's your truth. Living it.
And that's it for today's episode of Remix and Rewind. We talked about Daniel Caesar's new album, Son of Spurgy, breaking down our thoughts, the vibe of the project, and where this album sits in his career so far. We also talked about the themes and how it connects to his family, so I thought that was really interesting as well.
And we also dug into bigger picture questions, how Daniel's lack of pretty privilege may or may not shape how the album's perceived, and whether his artistry has outgrown past controversies. We actually want to know what y'all think. Is this project strong enough to be a comeback or just another album to sit on the shelf? Tap into our Instagram at remix letter N rewind and let us know. We would love to hear from y'all.
Hopefully we inspired you to take a deeper listen to the music you already love or maybe discover some new favorites along the way. And that was Remix and Rewind.
Remix and Rewind is produced in the studio of WANM-FM 90.5 School of Journalism and Graphic Communication at Florida A&M University.